kitchen. There's fun to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar. And that's my treat.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn, you bet. My country tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
You want some more?
And good evening. Welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Mary Carroll, and I have the honor this evening of standing in for Michelle Anna Jordan as your host. And we hope that you will enjoy the show, as you always do whenever she's at the helm here. Tonight, we're very honored to have as our guest Adam Parks of Victorian Farmstead in Sebastopol, corner of Highway 116 and Mill Station Road. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I understand you've been here before.
Yeah, it's been about 15 months since we were last on.
And that was when you were just getting started out?
Just getting started with the CSA.
Right. So now we can sort of do a then and now comparison.
For sure.
Well, tell us a little bit, for those listeners who weren't around then and aren't familiar with it, tell us a little bit about the whole farm. I understand it started as a Christmas tree farm?
Yeah, it still is. It's actually, the property itself is the oldest Christmas tree farm in Sonoma County. My grandparents bought it in 72. My parents ran it for about 16 years when they retired, and then my wife and kids and I took it over 3 years ago.
Wow. And so since then, I take it you've expanded it beyond just Christmas trees.
Yeah, Christmas trees are really great about 30 days a year, but the other 335, it's a little lean. So we started the meat company in May of 2010.
So that was really what drove the expansion?
Sure. It's a great year-round business, and we felt that we had a way to solve a need in Sonoma County that didn't really exist, and that became what is now our CSA.
You mean as opposed to the traditional type of sales relationship where you have a storefront and people come to you?
Sure. We started it out thinking that we had a good idea for how to kind of be more efficient with the way people used to buy bulk meat off a farm, where they would go out and the farmer would sell them a quote-unquote live animal and arrange for Sure Shot John, the slaughter guy, to come out and take the animal and butcher it at whatever butcher shop they wanted. And we started doing farmers markets in the interest of promoting our idea. And it turned out that people really just wanted to buy the retail cuts of meat. And so we started doing farmers markets in 2010 and gained some notoriety for selling fresh retail cuts of meat at a farmers market. And then we started the CSAs last February.
You mean people weren't as much into the relationship with their food on the hoof, as it were?
No, obviously that's grown considerably over the last 2 years since we've been involved, and certainly in the past 6 months. The best thing that can happen for us is every time an article on pink slime or E. coli or anything else comes out, I get a line out the door.
Well, that's true. And I think at this point, there's much more of an emphasis, thanks to people like Michael Pollan and,
for sure,
all of the West Marin meat and cheese producers, about not just being a locavore, but, making sure that your food is humanely treated during its lifetime.
Yeah, it's become so important that we're not only raising quality meat, but we're raising quality animals.
Right.
And one of the things that we learned very early on was that, excuse me, was that we, had a knack and a way of raising chickens that turned out a very tasty bird. The birds were well cared for. My wife, it's a Freudian slip there. My wife likes to say that, you know, our animals and our birds in particular have a bad 15 minutes their whole life. And that's how we raise all of our animals. And we've since partnered with three other ranches, a beef ranch, a pork ranch, and a sheep ranch that raise all our overflow because they're the best at what they do.
Well, that leads very nicely into my next question, which is what types of meat do you raise?
Beef, lamb, pork, and chicken. We have expansion plans for rabbit and duck in this year. But our expansion plans have changed, and we'll probably talk more about that later with some big changes that are coming for our farm and our business. We get a tremendous amount of our beef from Stumple Creek Ranch, Lauren and Lisa Poncha. Chris Cornett raises almost all my lamb now, and Pete Langley and Petaluma raises all our hogs.
So most of your meat, well, it sounds like all of your meat comes from West Marin, West Sonoma.
West Marin County. The farthest away is Pete in Petaluma. He's 20 miles from my ranch. And, yeah, we have intentions of keeping it as local as we can, knowing that we're going to grow to the extent that we may grow past Sonoma County, but we'll keep it as local. It's more important to me that the animals are well-raised and turn out a high-quality product than, you know, whether they're coming from 20 miles or 30 miles away.
You said you raise chickens. What breeds?
Cornish Cross is our meat bird.
Oh, okay.
That is the big commercial breed of chicken that everybody raises, Foster Farms and Tyson. We just raise it better, more humanely. It's raised on grass. The last half of their life is on pasture in what we call chicken tractors, which are moved every other day onto fresh pasture.
Oh, I think I've read it. There was some Michael Pollan cited one of those from the East Coast someplace where basically the farmer just sort of picked up his chicken coop and moved it around and thereby solved the problem of fertilizing the rest of his crops.
Right. You're referring to Joel Salatin, who actually was out here this weekend doing a brunch out at another meat CSA. Joel's kind of the godfather of this type of sustainable rotational grazing farming that we do.
Now, I know you had said it was the most common meat breed, but it does have some problems because it's been bred to grow very quickly.
Sure.
Have you dealt with those problems, or how do you deal with those problems?
Sure. What happens with them is they because of the genetic cross, it grows extremely fast. And so a bird that is raised in the barn as a conglomerate farm would do, where you've got a million birds inside a small area and they're force feeding them food, they're turning the lights on and off during the day so they eat more. They're trying to get that bird out to market in 35 to 42 days. Mm. So the difference in how we do it is we raise them out to 8 weeks. And we feed them once a day. They get a can of food in their tractors. And when that runs out, we feed them at dusk. Mm-hmm. And so their feed runs out somewhere around mid-morning. We've got 50 birds in a 100-square-foot tractor. And their feed runs out mid-morning. That forces them to forage. It also slows their growth a little bit. And what happens with those birds when they grow too fast is the breasts get so big, so heavy, that their legs will splay. And that's where you'll find in all the movies and whatnot that talk about factory farming, that's what they're talking about. The birds can't move. They kind of just scoot around on their breasts, which not only is terrible for the bird and the bird's quality of life, but also doesn't do much for the quality of the meat either if it's being dragged across the ground to get to the food and water.
So instead of having downer cows, you sort of have downer birds?
Exactly.
Oh, dear.
So we have very, very few of those. Because we grow them out slower and because they're getting more out of the pasture, we tend to have a much richer flavor to our chicken. And it stays juicy longer in the oven because they're getting so much out of the ground.
God, I'm drooling already. Now, you mentioned something about them being grass-fed.
Yep.
Define grass-fed. Does that include any supplements, or is it strictly pasture land?
No, they absolutely do get a organic mash from Hunt and Barron's in Petaluma.
Okay.
And it's just not feasible to raise a chicken on just pasture for the purposes of meat.
Right.
Our laying hens, while they also get an organic supplement, theirs happens to be soy free as well, are also out on pasture, and they're truly free range. There was a great video. I saw it on Marin Sun Farms Facebook page. And it's about a 6-minute video. You can get it off my Facebook page now as well. But it talks about the verbiage that's used when you go to the grocery store to buy eggs nowadays, cage-free, pasture-raised, and what all those really mean. You know, you can go in and pay $8 a dozen for cage-free organic eggs, but you need to understand that by cage-free, what they mean is they've got 5,000 birds in a barn that are not in individual cages. Their barn is their cage.
Oh, they're in an enormous cage.
Yeah, they're fed organic feed. But they don't see the outside. Their lights are turned on and off to get them to lay year-round. And it's a pretty miserable existence. Whereas our pasture-raised birds, and everybody around here that's doing it the right way, pasture-raised birds are out roaming the pasture. We want them to get as much out of the ground as they can, not just for our own fertilization, but for the quality of the product.
Do you brain blank. These senior moments, they really hit you. Do you use the same breed of birds for laying that you do for meat?
No. No. Laying hens, we have a – my wife is fantastic at hatching our own chicks out, but generally we get mutts. We buy some purebreds every year, so we get a proper amount because our eggs are – kind of uniquely packaged in a clear plastic double hinge container.
Oh.
And so they look real pretty when you have some whites, some browns, and some greens in there. And so we like to make sure that we have plenty of Araucana chickens, which lay the green eggs. But we hatch our own, so they're crossbred.
Oh, so, I mean, tell me a little bit about how that works. When you crossbreed the chickens, and I mean, obviously they're all the same species, so they can interbreed.
Sure.
But does that mean that one day they'll, you know, lay white eggs and another day brown, or is it just that certain hens lay certain...
Certain color eggs, yeah.
As you can tell, I'm a city girl.
That's
so
okay.
This is as informative for me as it is for our listeners.
Yeah. No, the egg color doesn't change. I've never been asked that question. That's a great question.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's one of those things where it never occurs to people who don't understand it to ask, and it never occurs to people who do understand it to even consider it because they just assume everybody knows it.
Right.
And that's one of the beauties of what Michelle does on this show is that she takes topics that perhaps are really mundane to the people who deal with them and extremely exotic to the people who don't and kind of makes them meet in the middle.
Sure.
And that's what we're doing here. So I really appreciate that.
Good.
Now, you mentioned that your farm has evolved for a number of good reasons into this CSA.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that. You know, all the different levels. Are they time levels, size levels?
Sure.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's great because there's no continuity whatsoever between the different meat CSAs. So I think that there is something out there for everybody. Ours is fairly straightforward. The main box is made up of beef, lamb, and pork.
Mm-hmm.
Subscribers have the option to waive off of lamb or pork if they choose for either religious or they don't like lamb or whatever.
Yeah, apparently a lot of people don't. I've always liked it myself, but I've run across a number of people in my adult life who just don't care for the taste of lamb.
Generally, I find I have about an 80% success rate of converting people, and the reason is most people that don't care for lamb, if it's a cute and cuddly thing, I can't argue with that.
Right. That, yeah.
If it's the flavor, most people associate lamb with a very greasy, gamey flavor, and that has to do with the fact that their experience revolves around corn-fed Midwest lamb or corn-fed Australian lamb, and that heavy corn diet is what creates that heavy, greasy flavor. It could also be an older lamb that would be closer to mutton.
I was going
to
say.
But it's mostly the corn-fed stuff that you're going to find is off-putting.
Mm.
Generally, our Sonoma County pasture lamb, we're so blessed to have the pasture land out here that we have because it creates this incredible true lamb flavor that really isn't matched anywhere else. So it's very, Michelle will tell you that there's a place in France that they eat some saltwater seaweed or something like that that's better, but I'd argue with her on it.
Well, not to mention the fact that by the time you either went over there and brought it back or had it shipped, it's a whole lot easier just to go to Sebastopol, and it's easier still just to sign up with a CSA.
Sure. So the CSA, beef, lamb, and pork. Mm-hmm. And we do 5 and 10 pound boxes.
Okay.
You can pick up either every other week or monthly.
Mm-hmm.
I find that our far and away the most popular subscription we have is 5 pounds a week with a chicken.
Okay.
We have two add-ons to our subscription where we have an add-a-chick is what I call it, and that allows the subscriber to add any number of chickens they want to their box at each pickup. And that's for a flat rate, depending. Right now it's $16 a bird.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to by the pound, which we retail them at. And then the other add-on is a breakfast box, which is a pound of bacon, a pound of sausage, and a dozen eggs for $24.
So basically, it reminds me a lot of the old model of the milkman, where you
exactly.
could actually ask your milkman to leave an extra pint of cream or something when you were going to have company.
Right. And we have what we affectionately call the chop shop on the farm, which is our retail outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And so people come there and they pick up their subscription boxes and they can buy whatever else they may need.
Oh, well, while they happen to be there.
Yeah. So it works very well. We have a pretty high retention rate that we're proud of. And people seem pretty happy with what they're getting. It saves you about 20-25% off of our normal retail costs. And I get asked all the time, what are our retail costs? It's on the website, but generally it's, we try to keep right around where Whole Foods or Pacific Market, something like that, is.
Right. And I mean, of course, you guys are up against the same thing that everybody else is when you've got the bargain conscious shopper saying, well, you know, I can get it cheaper at Safeway or Raley's or, you know, something like that. Well, yeah, you probably can. But A, is it going to be the same quality of meat? And B, is it going to be local? And the answer to both of those is probably, well, in one case, probably not. In the other, definitely not.
Sure.
Now, you mentioned that your most popular was the chicken box.
The 5-pound box with a chicken.
With the chicken. Okay, so that includes other things than chicken?
Yeah, it includes the box. The 5-pound box would be made up of a pound of steaks or chops, 2-pound roast, and 2 pounds of grinder stew. So the box that we put out this week, subscribers got a 1-pound New York.
Mm-hmm.
They got a 2-pound. They got their choice of either a 2-pound ham or a 2-pound. Was it ham and London broil? I think.
Okay.
And then they got a pound of ground beef. You get a pound of ground beef in every box.
Got it.
And then a pound of ground pork.
Oh, that's not bad. I mean, meatloaf. Here we come.
Yeah. Right.
Just out of curiosity, do they have any options for custom? Do you have a customizable box?
We do. We just have piloted it over the last couple of months, and it seems to be working out pretty good. Basically, what it is we put it along. It's done by money as opposed to by weight.
Uh-huh.
And what it does is if a customer wants to do a custom box, they can choose either a $50 or $100 box.
Right.
They pay in 6 or 12 month increments, and they save 15%. And so we collect the money up front, just like we do with the other box. And every 2 weeks or every month when they come in, they get, if it's a 50-pound box, they get $57.50 worth of whatever they want. If it's a 100-pound box, they get $115 worth of whatever they want. They can take all filet mignon if they want. They can take all ground beef if they want.
The reason I was asking is I was just thinking, you know, in terms of, I think I mentioned before we started the show that we've talked about that periodically, you know, we like the whole CSA idea and we just hadn't gotten it together, but we happen to be one of those families that just don't eat a lot of steak.
Sure.
I mean, we don't eat a lot of beef to begin with and we really don't eat a lot of steak. And so I was wondering what the feasibility would be for a family that perhaps doesn't particularly care for steak, but they do a lot of ground meat or, you know, something.
I think you're right on track. I mean, we tried to keep it as simple as we possibly could for the first year.
That makes sense.
So we could figure out what we were doing because it was brand new to us as well. And the custom box is our first deviation from what we've always done. Certainly the next step will be not only we'll probably have both a premium box, which is more all steaks
no
ground.
Right.
And then a box like you're talking about, which would be all roast and grind.
Not bargain box. That doesn't quite seem that.
I'll figure some creative name to call it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There's got to be something on it. Do you have smoked meats? Do you smoke your own meat? Or
we don't smoke anything ourselves. All my meat is smoked in Oakland at Prime Smoked Meats.
Okay.
And they do our bacon and our hams. Judging by our success of our bacon, they do a pretty good job with it. We're going to be rolling out a batch of pepperoni sticks and beef sticks from Roundman Smokehouse up in Fort Bragg next week. So we're excited about that because it's fairly local to us, and I've tasted their product. They do a great job, and so I think with our meat, it'll be pretty spectacular.
Are those like for snacking or for putting on a pizza or both? Or
they're little pepperoni sticks, like the size of, you know, half a Slim Jim.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, it's the kind of thing, especially when you do a farmer's market, it's nice to have something that somebody can grab and taste what you do right there.
That's true. And you can, if you want to, you can cut them up into chunks.
Sample them, sure.
Put a toothpick in it.
Absolutely.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Now I'm really getting excited. Well, you know, I think we're going to take a little music break here. And then right afterwards, we'll be back and talk some more about your CSA.
Sounds great.
welcome back to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. And we're talking with Adam Parks of Victorian Farmstead in Sebastopol about their CSA program, which sounds like it's absolutely delectable. We've been discussing some of the different types of things that are available and the configurations that they're available in. And of course, you were just listening to ZZ Top singing about barbecue, which was a perfect tie-in because as this weather improves, I suspect you're probably going to get a lot of people who are looking for things that are capable of being barbecued.
It's the beginning of what we call our happy time of year, yes.
You mean December is the happy Christmas time, happy exactly. Christmas tree time, this is the happy meat
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
Talk about your subscribers a little bit. Have you ever had any trouble with them, or do you have really great subscribers? How do you deal with them? Is your relationship good?
We're really fortunate. You'll get the occasional customer at a farmer's market who, you know, doesn't like this. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Just like in any retail operation. The subscribers are a really unique group in that almost to a man and woman, they're fairly grateful for what we do, for the ability to be able to come out and get stuff where they know where it's from, how it's being raised, who's in charge. And so it's a really, really positive experience for both of us. I get tons of compliments, and they do a great job of marketing for us. So we're very, very fortunate to have a great group.
Well, one of the things we were talking about off the air during the break was the fact that sometimes, you know, you have your standard basic package, for lack of a better term, that includes different things with which people may not be familiar. And so what it does is gives them an opportunity to try something that they perhaps might not ever buy because they aren't aware that it exists. And
sure.
If they are, they don't know what to do with it. And so you include recipes or cooking suggestions so that they can try it out and perhaps hopefully discover something new. Or I guess the worst case scenario is they try it and they think, okay, that's fine. It's not my favorite. And
right.
Then you move on.
Yeah. And we encourage, you know, just like we were talking about with the lamb, we encourage everybody to, you know, give it a try. If it's not for you, no problem. More for me. But, but you know, if you try it and you may find something that you really find a new experience in life, and that's a great thing, too.
And I know what you mean. I mean, in any environment, wherever you have customer service, there are going to be picky people that don't like the way you're doing something or what you're doing or think they could do it better or whatever. And I know it's probably tempting to say, then how would you like to take this over? But you don't, because that would be uncool.
Oh, I have those days.
I'm sure.
Sometimes you have the day where you want to tell them that, and the other days you just consider an opportunity to try to impress somebody.
That's true. And then do you get those types of people? I mean, you mentioned the farmer's market, and then, of course, you know, when people get their boxes, sometimes they may be disappointed. What about people who actually come to the farm? Do you have many customers who come out? I mean,
we're one of the things that's happened in this first quarter is we're going to be moving the retail operation. It's some county stuff that we can talk about later if you want, but
okay.
We're going to be moving the retail location to the new development in Sebastopol called the Barlow. And so we're very fortunate. My grandfather, when he bought that property, it is the best place you could put a small 5.5-acre farm because it's right on the main highway going from Sebastopol up to the coast and out to Monterio and that area, Jenner. And so it's we get a lot of traffic that sees the billboard and pulls in. We get a lot of regulars that are locals.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so we're very fortunate to be there.
Oh, that's great. And you mentioned that you go to farmers markets.
We do.
Which ones do you go to, and when are they?
This time of year, they're fairly slow. We have two year-round markets right now. I was in Moraga today. I go every Sunday. Sonoma, the town of Sonoma, on Friday mornings from 9
okay.
to 1. And as the summer goes, this is actually a good opportunity for me. I am desperately looking for people to do farmers markets for us. We have as many as 4 on a Sunday that we're supposed to be at this year. And I just don't have the manpower to man them right now.
Oh, you mean people to actually stand at the table and
yeah.
schmooze?
Yeah. So if anybody out there is interested, send me an email, and I'm looking for, you know, 2 or 3 people to help me do farmers markets, get trained to do them, and do them on their own.
That's good to know. And we will mention that towards the end of the
cool.
show, just to make sure that we cover everybody, because
sure.
at that point, I'll also be asking for contact information and where can people
Absolutely.
Go look at your website. And I understand later on, you also have an opportunity for some of our listeners that...
Yeah, a little contest. We're going to give away a $50 gift certificate.
That's right. So stay tuned, and you too could be a lucky winner. there are a lot of more so than there used to be. I was going to say an awful lot, and that's a relative term, of small meat producers and poultry producers now. Have you found that competition to be helpful or harmful, or does it have to do with the fact that they're not selling the same things you are?
farmers markets are really unique, and the fact that market managers differ greatly on whether it's a good idea to have one meat guy or four meat guys. Mm-hmm. Most markets will just have one, maybe two.
Okay.
So the competition, the competition is not real important in terms of it doesn't affect me one way or the other to my knowledge.
To your knowledge, right.
I'm sure it does. But I don't think that we lose business because of competition. I think that people find where they fit. Every farm is different, and every farm owner and manager handles it. Like I said at the beginning with the subscription boxes, there's nobody doing it the same as us, and there's nobody – we're not – you know, nobody's doing the same thing.
Right.
So you just kind of find your niche and how they farm, and, you know, there's certain farms out there that will do absolutely everything they can to make sure they have – you know, 100% soy-free, 100% organic. They know where the individual components of the feed are coming from and everything. And then there's guys that don't care.
Right.
They'll feed whatever they can just to get their product on the table.
Whatever's on sale.
Yeah. And, you know, we probably fall somewhere towards the high end, but certainly in the middle, because you have to be sensitive to price.
Oh, absolutely.
It's really tough to go out and sell a $35, $40 chicken.
Yeah.
But there's people doing it. And there's people that are paying that price because they're that sensitive to want to know what goes into their birds. We use an organic feed, but it's not soy free.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, you make your adjustments accordingly to how you want to run your business. What I tell all our customers is we do the absolute best we can to ensure the highest quality and keep the prices where they can afford them.
And the most important part I'm gathering is that you also have a policy of full disclosure.
Absolutely.
I mean, if people ask what goes into your feed, you'll tell them. And if it's not something that they're comfortable with, then they can make an informed choice.
Yeah, we actually keep a book with our feed tags in the shop
so that
somebody wants to see what goes into the feed, they're welcome to it. So we find that's helpful. It's the same when we first started out. We got a lot of objections because everything's labeled as Victorian Farmstead. But as I mentioned already, we use other farms to raise alive animals for us, which we buy. But that's all on the website as well. We make a point of not hiding anything. We're pretty transparent.
You know what? I mean, I'm going to draw an analogy here. I'm a quilter. And so it reminds me of when you buy fabrics, there are certain textile houses, but they have different designers. And so the fabric will say, you know, ABC Fabric Company designed by Joan Smith or whatever.
Sure.
And so
sure.
You know who the designer was, but also who the manufacturer is. And you're doing the same thing.
Absolutely. And you know, the main thing is it's all local. You can drive 20 miles and see any one of my animals out on the pasture at any one of the three farms.
Now, I'm going to disclose my ignorance right here. Are there any other meat CSAs? I know of a number of produce CSAs.
Sure. Yeah, there is. There's probably a half dozen.
Really?
And I'm not going to mention their names, not because of competition, but because of the county regulations and what happened to us this year in terms of getting into it with the county on that.
That sounds sort of like a good segue into what you were talking about earlier, where, you know, you had some issues, I understand, about various regulatory constraints and so forth. What are the challenges in general that a small producer faces, and specifically, how did that affect you?
The biggest problem is that the county doesn't really know how to handle a meat producer that's selling from a farm stand on their property. They have lumped us into the same category as if we were a winery or a liquor store. And so what it means is I'm more than welcome to slaughter the chickens on the ranch, and I'm more than welcome to sell in a retail style shop. The caveat being that I need a use permit to do that, which would cost me about $40,000.
Wow.
So what has happened because of that, and the only way you get into trouble is if you get a complaint filed against you.
Right.
And we have a neighbor up where we pasture our chickens who didn't like the chicken tractors across out her kitchen window. And so she's complained to about six different county and state agencies about us. And we flew through all of them with the exception of the PMRD, the use permit deal, where they determined that we did need a use permit.
So to raise them or to sell them?
To sell them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can farm. We're zoned agriculture. They're determining that that by butchering the chickens on the farm, that's a slaughter facility, and by selling the meat on the farm, even though it's processed in a USDA facility, that we still need a use permit to be a retail location. So that's why we're moving. I'm also in the process of working with people within the county since I already am well known to the county now.
I imagine you are.
none of my competitors want to be in my situation, so I figure that what I'm going to do is I'm working with people from the Cooperative Extension, PMRD, the Health Department, the Ag Commissioner's Office, and Efren Carrillo, my county supervisor, him and Susan Upchurch, his assistant. Incredible job of getting the county, the PMRD, to back off and let me continue my operations until we move. We don't slaughter on the farm anymore. I've got to haul. In fact, I got to get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning to haul a load of birds to Stockton. Instead of processing them.
There are no other slaughterhouses between here and Stockton?
No. There's one in Sacramento, and then there's Gramont out in Stockton. Fortunately, when I toured Gramont, they do a fantastic job. It's very clean. They have two inspectors on the line checking the birds as they go through.
Oh, that's cool.
I was very pleased. I don't like the idea of taking my birds and stressing them out by driving them that far in the back of a truck or a trailer. But if you have to, they do a nice job of making sure that the birds are as well taken care of as possible through the process.
And I would think that's important for you, too, because, I mean, what you're doing is making a commitment to your customers that these birds are basically being treated as well as they would be if they were with you the entire time.
Absolutely.
And having inspected the facility yourself, you're comfortable that that's what's happening.
Yeah. I don't have a choice, so it's nice that they do take it seriously and do take the hygiene and the inspection and everything seriously, because that means a lot to me and it means a lot to my customers.
So let me make sure I understand this. Basically, as long as you raise the animals at your farm and take them elsewhere on the hoof, as it were, to be slaughtered, and then sell them elsewhere, you'd be fine?
I mean, the issue is, so I can do farmers markets because I have a permit with the county health department to do that.
Okay.
And it has to all be USDA butchered, which it is.
Right.
My point is that we should be able to be, if all that is met and I have proper storage on the farm, meaning that we're keeping the meat less than 40 degrees,
right.
It's clean, et cetera, that we shouldn't be treated as if I'm, opening up a cheaper cigarettes on my ranch. That's what it feels like to us. My competitors out there, every single one of them, if they got in trouble and got inspected, they would be in the same jackpot. So what I'm trying to do is work with the county and say, look, you can either fine us out of existence, charge us $40,000, in which case we all go under,
right.
Or else we can figure out a way to say, okay, as long as you abide by these rules and pay a small fee every year for your permit, mm-hmm. you can run a farm stand selling your own meats or your own business's meats on your property.
Is it just because it's meat as opposed to vegetables?
Yeah.
I mean, vegetable farm stands don't have this, do they?
No, they don't, because they're not considered processed. Meat, by virtue of being butchered, Cryovac and USDA stamp, is considered processed.
Got it.
I could sell live chickens all day long on my farm. I believe I could even go so far as you could come in, buy a live chicken, and I could process it for you right there. And you could take it home, and that would be legal.
So basically custom processing on the spot?
Yeah. The labor intensity of that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I have to admit, I had this mental image of a CSA box with a couple of squawking chickens and,
Exactly.
No, I can see where that's not really feasible.
No.
And I mean, I grew up in San Francisco, and I have these visions of the 30 Stockton bus going through Chinatown with the squawking chickens out of the little old Chinese ladies' bags. And
absolutely.
It's always a treat and a half. I can see how that would be a problem. Because unfortunately, given the impetus of the CSA movement, I would be willing to bet that it's not going away. It certainly hasn't gone away with the produce.
No.
And I would guess that, as soon as people become aware that this type of service and quality is available in their backyard, so to speak, why wouldn't they want to do it? And in a sense, the county would be cutting its own throat by discouraging it.
It's amazing to me. And the issue, it's hard to put blame in any one spot because, the guys that I worked with at PMRD are simply reading the code and you don't conform to the code, so you're in violation. Fortunately for us, it's an election year.
Right.
And so everybody's really eager to please as many people as they can. So my plea to everybody out there would be that because you're listening to this show, your food's probably pretty important to you. Make a point of sending a note to your supervisor and saying, look, get it fixed.
That's a good point.
I really don't think it's that complicated. It exists, and it's a pretty simple fix to allow people to do what we do and make sure that this incredible product that we have in Sonoma County can stay here. I mean, it's crazy that I've got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday and drive to Moraga to sell. But that's what I have to do because it's not important enough to Sonoma County to keep that product here.
It's even crazier that you have to get up at 0 dark 30 and go to Stockton to get your birds slaughtered.
Yeah.
That's a long way away.
We're working on it.
I know. Okay. Well, if everybody who's listening out there, just, you know, make sure that you let the county supervisors know that it's very important to have these CSAs, not just for the sake of the small farmers, but also for the sake of the consumers in the county, because we all do appreciate good food, and we appreciate food that's been treated humanely from the time it first comes onto the earth until the time we give it an appropriate send-off.
Absolutely.
I think it's time for another musical break now. So we talked about barbecue last time and outdoor cooking. Our next song will have something to do with indoor cooking in the kitchen.
Hey, fellas, there's something you ought to know. When you make love to your baby, you got to take it nice and slow. You got to give a good love. You got to heat up the oven before you put the meat inside. Yeah. Don't get in a hurry. Make love, don't make time. Don't be a bull in a china shop, baby. You got to heat up the oven. You
once again, we're back with Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, talking with Adam Parks of Victorian Farmstead in Sebastopol about his CSA. You know what just occurred to me, Adam? We've been talking about CSAs, and we've made a number of comments about how sometimes people don't understand and we don't think to explain because it's so obvious. We should probably emphasize what a CSA is.
Sure. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and years ago it was a group of people in a community that would come help the farmer with whatever he was growing or producing during the year in exchange for a share of that at harvest time. Mm-hmm. And then it got to be where everybody had a regular job, and so it became money instead of time that they put in. What it does for the farmer is it allows us to balance our harvest schedule, particularly for meat producers, where we need to know ahead of time so we can raise the right amount of animals.
Right.
If you use my chickens as an example, by having a steady subscription basis where I know that every week I need to have 50 chickens ready for my subscribers, mm-hmm. It allows me an economy of scale and to balance things out with my retail sales.
So that you don't end up with an inordinately large number of overstocks.
Yeah. You try to we sell very little frozen meat. Mm-hmm. We try to do everything fresh if we can. The subscription boxes do contain a lot of frozen meat. That's where it goes when we freeze it off. And we tried to even do that fresh, but what we found very quickly was my subscribers told me that, you know, we just toss it in the freezer as soon as we get home anyway.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, many people aren't going to be able to use that much right away.
Yeah, so that made it very simple for us.
That's a good point, and especially since you can probably control the temperature of your freezers and the, you know, and so forth a lot more closely than many people when they just pitch it in the top half of the refrigerator.
Yeah, exactly.
When people come and express concern about the fact that they can't afford a meat from a small farm, how do you address that?
I think we can come up with something for everybody.
Okay.
If you're willing to be a little adventurous, if you're willing to try some new things, there's always something that can fit somebody's budget. I'm very sensitive to the price points that we have because the reality of it is I'm not sure my family could afford to eat, you know, what I sell. I go to the freezer now and we go to pull out meat for dinner. It's all got a price tag on it. And it's a lot harder for me to pull out a $22 ribeye than it used to be when I was a kid, where we had a whole freezer full of beef and I could go get whatever we wanted for dinner that night with no thought to what it cost.
Wow.
For us, it's a consistent cost, but it's still an opportunity cost that I'm losing by eating that ribeye rather than selling it. You know, the ground meat is $8 a pound for ground beef. Is it more than Safeway? For sure.
Right.
No question. I think that if you splurge a little bit, eat less of a better quality meat, you're probably going to be better off in the long run.
That's actually true, I think, not just of meat, but just about anything. I know that I've heard that said for numerous, I won't say diet plans because that's really a disfavorable word these days, but you know, any kind of healthy eating plan, you're much better off eating good quality, whether it be chocolate or pastry or butter or whatever, and less of it. And generally, less of it will satisfy you more.
Yeah, and it's such a great the farmer's markets are a great way to explore that, because somebody came in today and at Moraga and they were looking for something, and she was bemoaning the fact that she had to feed six people in her family and couldn't afford to buy enough steak for it. And I made the suggestion. I said, here, this flank steak's 10% off today. Take the flank steak, throw it in some salsa, put it on the grill, and slice it up over a salad, because you're filling them with the salad and the veggies and everything, but everybody gets a couple strips of steak and you're good to go. So it's just a matter of kind of adjusting your expectations and knowing that you want to feed your family better food. I think when the economy crashed years ago and people were used to spending $10,000 on vacations and $50,000 on a new car, and now they had no money,
right.
Everybody kind of turtled and took all that money and hid it under the mattress. Now that things are at least more consistent and we know what it's like to have that crash, I think what people are choosing is to spend their money on better quality food, better quality produce, better things for their family rather than material things like cars and vacations and whatnot. So maybe they don't have $50,000 of disposable income, but maybe they've got $1,000 that they can put towards a meat CSA or a vegetable CSA or better milk or better eggs.
And they may very well do that. I was reading in the paper the other day where there was a study done that indicated that people are suffering from what they refer to as frugality fatigue.
Yeah.
And so they're very cautiously beginning to spend money, perhaps not certainly on the scale they used to, but as you say, you know, it's a small luxury and it actually is something that has a lot of benefit to the community, to the person, to the farmer. I'm also guessing, and this is just my speculation, that when people realize that there are certain things that they can do. I mean, most people can raise vegetables in their garden.
Yep.
Okay, so that's money you're not spending on vegetables. Since most people aren't going to raise beef in their garden,
right,
then the money they were going to buy vegetables with at the store, they can put towards higher quality, locally raised
sure.
meat.
And there, absolutely, there's a lot of ways to stretch. You know, I have one person who comes in and she buys a pound of ground beef and she buys a pound of liver, grinds the liver in her kitchen processor, mm-hmm. and mixes it with the burger. Now she's getting liver into her kids and they don't know the difference.
They don't know?
Yeah. And I mean, she's doubling the amount, you know, liver's $3 a pound. So she's doubling the amount of meat that she has to serve her family by doing that. And it's probably better for them.
Actually, I can imagine doing that with meatloaf or meatballs and spaghetti, too.
Yep.
Because, I mean, think of how many people use chicken livers as a delicacy.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've
chicken
had
livers are fantastic.
Aren't you? Especially you know, broiled chicken livers tossed with a little bit of olive oil and pasta.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. So you mentioned the Barlow Center earlier.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Tell us about how. Are you going to have a shop there? Give us some.
It's
us all.
Right now, it's purely hypothetical because we're in the courtship stage. We've been negotiating with them, and we think we're going to go into the design stage now, where my plans are going to go to an architect. My dream is that we will have a USDA inspected butcher shop there.
Wow!
I want it to be an old fashioned style butcher shop where you can come in on a Friday afternoon and say, "I want to buy some ribeyes," and we wheel out a quarter beef, put the rib rack on the table, and cut them however large you want them.
Wow!
White wrap them and send you on your way. It will also be where we cut and wrap our meat for our subscription boxes and everything else as well. The Barlow is a really cool concept where it's an industrial zone. It's as you come into Sebastopol on 12, it's the first signal light on Morris Street there, that huge construction project off to the right. And it's zoned industrial. We were talking about use permits and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's zoned industrial. And so the developer wants people that are producing there. So originally my intent was just to open a retail location there.
Right.
But part of the deal is they want people producing.
So you can like go and dry your granola or whatever.
If you're a baker, you need to bake there. If you're making cheese, you need to make your cheese there. And that's what they're doing. They've got some great tenants already locked down, many more in the process. And if it's half of what they say it's going to be a spectacular thing for Sonoma
County.
And
then they deal with all the administrivia of getting the kitchens inspected and all that kind of stuff?
No, it's not a community project. Everybody's on their own as far as that goes. There'll be, I assume there'd be a community kitchen there where people, a commercial kitchen,
yeah.
But no, everybody's on their own as far as that goes. So I'm learning a tremendous amount about building and construction and USDA and health departments, way more than I wanted to know.
I'm sure. But it sounds as though it's going to be a really good payoff.
I am cautiously enthused and mostly terrified.
Well, the next question I was going to ask you actually leads right into your contest, because the question I have is, you know, you've talked about farmers markets and other ways. How do you reach out to new customers? How do you let people know that you're out there? You know, do you have weekly specials?
We do a number of things. My background was in marketing, particularly sports marketing, before I moved back to the farm. And so we have a website, Vic Farm Meats, V as in Victor, VicFarmMeats.com. We have a newsletter I call it weekly-ish. It mm-hmm. used to be a weekly newsletter. I get it out every 2 or 3 weeks, to be honest. And people sign up at the farmers markets or when they come to the shop and add their email to it.
So you got a mailing list.
Yep. And it's all via email. You can go to the website and there's a little box there where you can sign up. We have a Facebook page, just like everybody. That's actually what I wanted to do. I thought of this contest this afternoon. It's kind of a little test case. So what I thought I'd do is that anybody that goes to our Facebook page during this segment and then for an hour afterwards, clicks like for Victorian Farmstead on the Facebook page and then makes a little post there that says, "I heard you on the radio," whatever. We'll take all those names, throw them in a hat, and draw one for a $50 gift certificate at either the farmers markets we go to or at the chop shop.
Oh, that's great.
Need to see how many people are listening.
That's right. So if you're listening out there, and if you don't have a Facebook page, call somebody who does, and you can maybe set up a deal with them, and just make sure that you go to Victorian Farm Meats. It's VicFarmMeats.com.
Yep.
And click on their Facebook link and make sure that you like them.
Yep.
And you too can be in the running.
If it's really a problem, you can email me. It's Adam@VicFarmMeats.com.
Okay. So now you have the web address, you know where to go for all this information. I assume you probably have little blurbs about what's good, what's coming up, if there's anything new and different available.
I usually put something on special every week. A lot of times it'll be a spend this much, get 10% off, spend this much, get 15% off, that kind of thing. This week in particular, we had New York strip steaks and bone-in pork chops on sale, 10% off. And if you spent $80, you got an additional 10% off. We run specials on the subscription boxes through the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the biggest promotion we've ever done is actually going on right now. We put it out for, and all the details are on the website, mm-hmm. but we put it out for the first 10 subscribers that signed up, and we've had 4 since last week when we released it. And it gives you free boxes tacked onto your subscription depending on how long you sign up for.
Got it.
So, you know, the max is if you sign up for a biweekly box, 5 or 10 pounds for a year, you'd get 4 free boxes tacked onto the end of your subscription, which is, you know, on a 5-pound box, that's an extra couple $100.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Another couple months or so.
Yeah, exactly. It's
that much more shopping you don't have to do.
Right.
Do you do any business with restaurants, or is it all just individual customers?
We've done business with restaurants. We had our stuff in Peter Lowell's a lot last summer when they did their Zero Kilometro menu, which was great. Chef Daniel Keaton, who's no longer there, but he did a fantastic job with our products. I'm really excited. This is a great question. Thank you. I'm going to get a lot of props for this one. I took my wife to dinner at the new place in Sebastopol last night, Forchetta Bastoni,
mm-hmm.
It used to be Pizza Vino. And Chef Steven, we were very fortunate, we sat at the chef's counter. And Chef Steven, I told him, just feed me whatever you're doing with our stuff. And they're taking a whole lamb a week, about a dozen chickens, and they're going to start in on pork coming up very shortly. And the food is amazing. It was the lightest gnocchi that I've ever had.
Wow.
It was really incredible. Lamb ragu on that. And then he did a braised lamb shank that was incredible. The pate with the chicken and pork was incredible. So the stuff they're doing down there, it's a cool concept too. If you don't know about it, it's two sides to the restaurant, Asian street food on one side and Italian soul food on the other side, with a killer bar. So
I assume that's where the gnocchi with lamb ragu was.
Yeah, we ate on the Italian side, but my mom says the Asian chicken wings on the Asian side are the best she's ever had. So
that's great. And of course, those are your chickens too.
No, they haven't. The chicken is that's one of the things that's tough about restaurants is because we're a small producer.
That's true. They probably need more than you can provide.
I mean, if they're going through 1,000 airline breasts a week, I can't do that. If they want to put a half a roaster on special and they want 40 birds a week, no problem.
Got it.
So we're starting to wholesale. We're looking at some grocery stores, one in the city, Byright. We're looking at Marinwood Market, the new one in Novato.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Fork Catering. Sarah Piccolo uses our ground beef for her burgers, and she does an amazing job. The tomato pancetta chutney that she makes is incredible. We're getting a little traction here and there.
Do you look at doing business with any other grocery stores in Sonoma County, or is that too much of a competition given that you're here?
For right now, it's too much of a competition. I want to drive people down to ultimately to where we're at the Barlow.
Right.
You know, wholesaling's great, but it's more than I want to do right now. I think every guy that does what I do with the small production of meat has mm-hmm. a secondary line. So we're doing farmers markets, and then there's another one out there. His secondary line is almost exclusively wholesaling.
Okay.
My secondary line and what's becoming my primary line is the CSA boxes or the subscription boxes. So to do that and wholesale at this point is a little much.
Question about the subscription boxes.
Sure.
As I understand the model, you pack the boxes and you set them aside, and then you let the customers know when they're available.
Yep.
They come to a central location and pick them up, right? It's not a delivery service?
Not at this point. Right now, about 80% of the boxes are picked up at the farm in Sebastopol.
Okay.
We do offer subscriptions at Sonoma Farmers Market and at Moraga.
Oh, so where people who are going to be there anyway can pick up
sure,
stuff?
Because people from Moraga aren't going to drive all the way to Sebastopol to get their box.
That would be a
kind of problem. We did a special one last year for the Windsor Farmers Market where we did a subscription for the length of the market because it starts in May and goes to December.
Right.
And the price of it just went down throughout the year as the subscription time shortened. So, you know, we try to be flexible, but the majority of the people are picking up. Ultimately, I've got one guy that's been bugging me for a while in Walnut Creek who wants – he says he's got 5 friends that want to sign up, and he'll come pick up all 5 and deliver them. So we're looking into that model as well.
That's great. So, we're just about out of time.
It's a short hour.
This always happens. I know. It's kind of time flies when you're having fun, and we're definitely having fun. So basically, I was going to ask if you would look into the future, what would you see? And you just told me. I mean, you've got the experimentation with different models and alternative channels and so forth. And I suppose it depends on what happens. And the ones that really take off, then you have a little bit more comfort with the stable distribution channel, and then you can afford to experiment a little bit. Or if it turns out that something is not working as effectively, then you may be able to clone it and tweak it. And
we're actually in the middle of this huge project right now. One of my subscribers, Sam Horowitz, is doing a complete redo of my back room stuff that's going to allow us an online store. It's going to allow us more efficiency with the subscribers. Everything I do is customer driven. So the reason we rolled out the custom box was one of my subscribers said, I love coming here, I love getting the meat, but I want to pick what goes into it. And so then it was just up to me to come up with a price on what worked for me to allow him to do that. And now we've got a whole new line of subscription boxes built around that. So we listen to every suggestion that comes in. Mike was asking, you know, doesn't eat beef, so he wants just a pork box. Well, I can come up with a price for everything. So then it's just a matter of if it fits everybody's needs, both price and quantity.
Well, we want to thank you very much for appearing on the show. It's been a pleasure having you. And want to remind everybody out there that for the next hour or so, if you go to their webpage, that's VicFarmMeats.com. Did I get that right?
Yep.
And just like their Facebook page, you can be in the running for a $50 gift certificate. And, I mean, what's not to like? The only thing now that I would put in my 2 cents worth is at some point in your non-existent spare time, you guys might want to come up with a cookbook.
Yeah. If you go to the website, we have a section for serving suggestions. I don't do recipes.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you how I cook everything that we sell.
A taste of this, a handful of that.
Yeah. It's simplistic. You got to kind of check them out, but it's a little simplistic, but everybody seems to like them. So.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, once again, you have been listening to Adam Parks here with Victorian Farms and great CSA meats. Be sure and check them out. Be with us next week for Wine Country, the Sonoma County's most wine country. Wait, let's try this again. Mouthful. There we go. The Wine Country's most delicious hour. I'm Mary Carroll, sitting in for Michelle Anna Jordan, who will be back next time. And have a great week.
To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now. Let's go eat. We've got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing,
to the Lord that praises me, it's time for dinner, now let's go eat.